Now, I know what you're thinking, pants people. What are them pants boys up to this time? This year? This coming season? Well, I'll tell you what's up. Actually, I won't tell you, because I don't know. But where you can find out is by joining our Discord, hanging out on our Instagram, checking out our YouTube. We have one of those, I think. We have a lot of cool stuff out there, and as you know, every year we're doing something else wild and crazy. Sci-Fly coming back? Probably. Are we doing some more collabs? For sure, maybe. I don't know. Get on there, check our stuff out, keep your eyes open, and get ready to unzip. I predicted the situation on Dialogon has been handled. Calabang has been saved. We're not entirely sure what set the Storm Giants off, though they look to have been following the serpentine heel of Dialogon's last Bakunawa. This mythical dragon named Pangilnung Buon has long been known as a resident of the world, a figure of legend. We know the Storm Giants of the Deep Race have long worshipped the monster's kind, but we just don't know why it suddenly turned on the populace of Calabang. But no matter, who cares? The Greeks have all been slain or sent packing, thanks to the local Bonesinger Militia and the Celestial Forces posted by Atosh. We also have to give special recognition to Handsome Jai and Salome the Sightweaver, who were instrumental in the battle and its rescue efforts directly following. Interestingly enough, another known luminary appeared in the scene out of nowhere, one Mesmer Eyes. I have been near certain that Miss Yara Ivanka had died. But it seems her little disappearing act fooled us all. How very fortunate that she would return now.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but my chestnuts are roasting.
Because it's the holidays!
Oh, yeah. And we're current, so the timing is correct. This is the Christmas episode.
This is the Christmas episode.
Yeah.
You're right.
As we record, it's December 19th.
Yep.
So, jingle bells.
Mm-hmm. Jingle balls.
You know what season it also is?
What was that?
It's sixth season.
Yeah.
If you got a respiratory illness, say, hell yeah!
Hey, yeah.
So we decided, why not get into a small room together?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
so. sad little podcast crew today.
Yeah, you'll have to forgive my voice today.
And every day,
a really rough day. And yeah, I am sick. It's great.
Well, you're just getting into it, I'm just getting over it. Yeah, today was like the first day where I didn't need a cough drop 24/7. So feels nice.
And I've got a little pile right here.
You do.
You know what else feels nice?
Mm.
What's that?
We got mail.
Holiday mail? Oh, Holly and Jolly.
Holly and Jolly.
Belly full of jelly. Get that thing open right now, Santa
Belly
Claus.
Belly full of jelly. Dude, don't make me laugh. On. It hurts to laugh.
Wait a minute. I have a...
No laughing tonight.
I have a thing that I'm supposed to read as we're to be read when opening. No peeking.
No peeking?
Okay. One of you guys start to open this while I do the reading.
You do.
Me? All right.
Go.
I'm going to do it sensually.
No, I'll do it. Jesus Christ.
Mm, read it.
Stop.
Read
no.
it. I need to hear you read it.
It actually will be better if you open it first and then I read it.
Okay. Mm. All right. I'll open it first. What am I looking at here? What is this?
Guys, I see packaging.
I see. Oh, okay. All right. Should I talk about it? Should I talk about it now?
Yeah.
I see dice. I see three sets. Three sets of dice, and I get first pick because I'm opening it.
Actually, Zila has already picked which dice goes to which of us.
Oh, Zila!
We got dice from Zila.
Hell, just
in time for Christmas.
God. Also, welcome to Castle Die Hard, it says in here. Die Hard is a Christmas movie, and so it all comes around.
Hey, wow. That might have been the most controversial thing that we've said in the whole podcast, though.
I think the company is Die Hard.
Well, no. I'm talking about Die Hard being a Christmas movie.
I've never seen Die Hard.
I don't have a dog in that fight, but I just know that it's super controversial.
I've never seen it, and I don't care about it.
Wait a second.
Hold on.
I know these.
Hold on.
The tricksy Zila. The tricksy little goblin-ess.
So Zila says, Keep in mind colors. David will know his. It I matches do. The knives he's put into Zeb and Crispin.
Look at this motherfucking dice. Yeah, silver with red spackle blood. This is the blood of Zebulon and Crispin right there. You see that?
Fuck off.
Get close. You'll be bloody on this too.
Jeremy's,
I'm going to cop all over you.
Yeah, Jeremy's was picked for Jules and Dresden, both isolated nice. In their oh, own ways, but yep. not always oh,
I
alone.
Knew. I knew the second I saw it.
Oh, oh yeah. So fitting. Holy look hell. At that. It's like a kind of cold blue, like, ooh.
Stephen's colors strike magical, resonant, bringing change with every step.
And the Golden Bay, red oh, and gold, dude. Baby.
Oh,
look
yeah,
that.
Look at that. As you, yeah, they're either,
that's so
they're either
slick.
Gold or red, like, as you look at them. They're, it's like this weird,
this
cool mirror effect.
Awesome.
Dude, the D6 is a rounded D6.
Ooh,
I love that so much.
Oh, my gosh.
Hold on, I want to crack mine open.
Oh, my God.
Get out of here, all my other dice.
Thank you so, so much.
Look at my bloody dice. Look at this bloody
D4. What a very merry Christmas.
Oh, and a very merry Skylights. You guys remember Skylights? Oh. When I was going to do that?
Yep. Hold on, sorry. I
never did anything.
We'll do it soon. Skylights. It's a holiday in this setting. It's going to happen.
Dude,
we just forgot. I forgot.
Inside these are wild.
Dude, hold on. Ready? Listen to this. Listen to this. I'm just going to roll my whole set.
Dude, that sounds so good. Ready? Ready?
Oh,
oh yeah.
Want to hear a character? Yeah. Listen to this. Oh, it's like the scream of a Blanche Trudeau. Final moments. These are so sick.
Wow. Yeah,
guys,
thank
real quick,
you.
Real quick, there's
holy
also a sticker,
I'm excited to play with these.
There's a sticker pack here, too. Let's open these real fast. Because it's presents time. I'm having my Christmas now.
Dude, I love the numbers on these, too.
Yeah. Super easy to read.
I'll be honest with you. I actually kind of had Christmas already today, too. We
you
lost,
did.
We lost power, and I didn't know anything
oh,
else
no.
to do, so I opened
oh,
my
no.
presents.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God. Are you serious? Oh, look. Yeah, yeah.
Wait, let me do this.
So that's a gold
ooh.
Side, and then there's a
ooh.
Red side.
Ooh.
And they're, like, so shiny.
Three stickers. We each get one. There is the cleric dice, the wizard dice,
ooh.
And cherry dice.
Oh, my God.
That's super sick.
That's
super
awesome.
Sick. I'll put these right here. Oh my gosh. Thank you, Zila.
Thank you,
as
Zila.
Ever.
This
oh
is
my
incredible.
Gosh. That's
thank
so
you so
cool.
much.
So special. And at Christmas. And tomorrow's my birthday.
Yeah. Hey, tomorrow's your birthday.
Yeah.
Happy
it's like,
birthday,
a, it's like an early birthday, early Christmas surprise.
Well, now yeah. all our chestnuts are roasting. This is great.
Was it Merry Christmas, everyone?
Are we rolling much tonight? Because Papa got a new set of dice.
I don't know. It kind of depends. Maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. We're in a weird night because you just got through the shit.
Sneak a check in there.
Let's talk about that, by the way, what happened last week. Because you played the long game. You saved everyone. It was kind of nuts. Like, I can't believe you guys put the super in superheroes last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I had some Jai's death scene right now. But the night started, I was like, they're not getting over there in time. He's going to die. Now, if you had gone over to help him immediately, I was like, yeah, you know, he can get through this one. But the situation was up. I didn't think it would be possible to go and save everybody. I thought you'd have to go pick certain directions to learn certain things to do everything. And you kind of just blew me out of the way. I was starting my death scene. What? Imagine you're writing a book and you're filming a movie and you're filming or writing a death scene and you start the scene off and then like some rogue agent shows up in your scene and is like, oh no, you don't. It's the best feeling. That's D&D.
Mm-hmm.
You can't,
yeah.
You start a death scene. You don't know what's going to happen because the actual main characters are totally out of your control and they're just doing zany shit and they whip out spells that have 300 foot range and you didn't even know spells could go that far.
I didn't want to let you have it. I didn't want to let you have it.
I'm glad. I'm stoked.
I think that's I remember even saying out loud, that like if I didn't do something, Jai was going to die that turn.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
End of the round.
I could just read your stupid fucking face.
And hitting the exact, I rolled the die. I was like, if you don't kill at least one of them, I'm still killing Jai. I want to reward you, but I can't make it too easy. You know, you cast one spell. Can't make it too easy. Mm-hmm. I rolled, it was like something like some amount of D8, like 48 or something for how much HP they had left after duoing Jai for a while. They were obviously going to be injured, injured. And it was 17, and you rolled exactly 17. The whole thing blew my mind. It was so cool. That's
great
the game. That's the game. A holiday miracle, one might say.
An early Christmas miracle. Or was that Thanksgiving at the time? It feels like it's been weeks since we recorded.
It has been 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So let's get into the aftermath. Some hours have passed now since the grand heroic efforts that took place dead in the center of the capital city of Calipang, of the world of Dayalaman. I got it right first try.
You already said it today, though.
Well, I got it right those tries, too. I'm on it. I have so many new words to pronounce tonight, and I'm going to kill every one of them in a good way. That sounded bad, but I mean it good. There have been many efforts. Shield bearers arrived. They pushed through, combing the city, combing the rubble, saving every life they could. And there were casualties. Of course there were casualties, but they're brought down to, I guess, the minimum possible because you guys, I mean, right here at the dead center here, like you saved lives that had no time. They could not wait. Jai and a family trapped beneath a burning shop. A woman dead, truly dead in the arms of her son. If you hadn't sent that diva down to assist the fight, would Yara be alive now? Who can say, Salome, but you linger here yet in the plaza of the Serpentine Jewel where everything went down, this whole battle went down, and now where a huge crowd has suddenly gathered. You see celestials flying above, you know, kind of flying this place of glory. They look beat to hell, your radiant allies. You see shield bearers exhausted from tireless and fast efforts. And you see so many yellow and black checkered vests of paparazzi guild members and flashing recorders. And you see a lot of Dialongos. This is the book that puts the resident name for the people of Dialongon. Dialongos, Dialongon, Dialongos. Everybody now, Dialongon.
No, I'm waiting until you mess all of those up.
No, I think you did pretty good.
Good.
It was pretty good.
I'm honest tonight, 120%. You see, most of the residents of this city, the natural residents of the city, are human with dark hair and brown skin. You see, they have like kind of radiant eyes of yellow, green, or brown are most common. You also, there's a lot of dragonborn and tieflings indigenous to this sort of archipelago world. Though you see they're kind of different. Like many dragonborn have iridescent scales and their features a lot more serpentine than draconic. And many tieflings have like iridescent feathers decorating their body, kind of spiked up between their horns and such and such. And we just see all these people are gathered. I think we zoom down into the crowd and we see one paparazzi. Looks like some important sash covering her sort of figure. Sort of middle-aged woman, hair up in a bun tight, and she's excitedly interviewing, you know, people. And you see she's like over there interviewing Jai and Yara Ivanka, mesmer eyes. Open and standing in the light at last. And there's just cameras flashing all around. Mesmerized, your sudden disappearance had left us all reeling. Most had assumed that you had been killed. Would you care to tell us where you've been? Mike just goes, hand it out. Magical Mike, I don't care. And she just...
Mage hand Mike.
It's really like a spellcasting focus with like a spell cast on it to increase voice volume.
Great.
Yeah, cool. It's a magic mic. Yeah. It's a magic mic.
Magic mic.
We've all seen the movie.
Yeah.
We know what it's all about.
Wait, that wasn't intentional? I thought you were actually like just acknowledging that.
No, I wasn't. Oh,
Oh, okay.
She holds it out to Yara, who just kind of long pause, staring into like probably someone's camcorder. Then, no. Ah, okay. Well, handsome Jai, they tell me you battled against two storm giants alone, and you survived this encounter. He points at him and just... Well, they almost got me, but and he kind of looks up into the sky nearby where I believe Salome may be flying around. You hanging out, Salome?
Yes. Yeah,
I hope. He's just looking at nothing. He looks up. Ah, shit. I was trying to do something here, but she's gone.
Yeah, Salome's up flying around with the rest of the Celestials.
And you see, like, his eyes catch yours, and he just says, it seems justice is undying after all. The fact that he's looking to you is not necessarily noted. I'll say that was subtle. Mm-hmm. But he is making a statement. And you see, like, this kind of a murmur. And then the reporter sort of steps back in just like, tell me, what is next for our new luminary power couple, huh? Huh? And Jai puts his arm around Yara and, well, we'll stick around and watch over things here in Calipang. And join in their building and relief efforts, wherever possible. The Gyar speaks of, yes, we will be watching very carefully. You might say that we will have our eye... Honey, don't. Please. Please don't.
Please don't, Yara.
we we pan away to another spot in all of this chaos where like another interviewer is talking to survivors of the attack. And perhaps your vision shifts here too, Salome. You see there's a familiar figure being interviewed now. You only ever saw her half blackened by lightning and collapse on the ground, I think, following the battle. Her wounds are healed now, and a thick blanket covers her body. It is the woman saved by Jules. You see, she has a very, very small frame, almost alarmingly thin, kindly features, aged and sunken by stress. She's got like some kind of round spectacles that she's thrown on that maybe had fallen off before. Neither of you noted them before. And she's holding the hand of her teenage son, who's actually, now you see, stands a bit taller than her. And they both just stare out with just bright, bright yellow eyes, sunflower petal yellow. And you were struck directly by the Bacchanoma's lightning and lived? And you see she shares a look with her son and...
I lived. I was saved by the Sightweaver.
Incredible. Incredible. And do you have a message for Salome the Sightweaver now to share with us? Do you have any words for your hero? And he points the mic back to her and she does look up towards you. And this is very notable. Like everyone's eyes follow her gaze as she looks to you.
Not now. No. No, I hope that I may find a time to speak to my hero alone, to give proper private gratitude, and to offer aid in whatever endeavor they choose to embark upon, especially if that endeavor involves pursuing Pongil.
This all happening beneath you, Salome, and I'll ask you, what is your immediate intention? As, like, perhaps time passes, she moves back into the crowd, her son moving with her, both nodding some reverence towards you. But clearly they want to speak. You see Jai and Yara, most of the crowd is gathered on them. They start to kind of move down, you know, maybe helping other people out, maybe moving down to, like, discuss the rebuilding efforts. And a lot of the crowd starts to slowly pull away. A lot of the Celestials moving with them to keep watch over a kind of large public, you know, commotion.
Salome is up in the sky with the rest of the Celestials, you know, pointing out spots where aid is still needed and helping to coordinate relief efforts. And she's pretending that she didn't really notice this conversation. And at a time later when things have settled down, most of the reporters have gone home, Salome will try to keep her eye on where this woman went and try to find her in a more quiet moment.
Hell yeah. And actually, before we move on from this, we should talk about what's happened up until now. Because you've had time to talk to other Celestials, and as we talked about, you outrank a lot of them. Is there any information you wanted to gather from them? Anything that they might know that you'd want to ask about? This might be a good time.
Mostly my questions would be how everything started, okay. Where the Bacchanal came from, what may or may not have set the Bacchanal off, where the storm giants came from.
Okay.
Kind of like what the beginning of this all looked like.
They would let you know, and you just get this for free, because, again, you don't need to roll. You outrank them. You saved some of them. They're clearly going to tell you all this. They show you bravely fighting this thing, almost get eaten by it. It was about 5 days ago that this Bacchanal, who was known to be the last of his kind and thought to be dead, Pongil started attacking random settlements and then vanishing into the sky or sea before anyone can get there to sort of pursue. His speed has made it impossible to catch, even for the Celestials, who are very fast. You remember Hieronix chasing, like, you weren't there. Jules remembers Hieronix chasing him down the down the palace corridors. These things are fast.
Yeah.
Pongil is faster. You know that it was all outer settlements until now, but very shortly, very, very shortly before your gemstone arrived, the city of Calipang is kind of resting on the northern coast of an island known as, Malabilac.
Believable.
Mm-hmm.
And so the northern part of the city is just pure coastline. The dragon appeared from the skies. A storm was building to the north, and as it kind of came close, they realized it was not natural. The wind was moving too fast, and they began to like start gathering for battle. They thought they could just ward away the creature. They flew up to meet it. What they didn't realize, as the storm and as the serpent flew into the city, the waters
churned as storm giants poured out from the sort of coastline, climbing onto the docks, rushing into the city. Storm giants have enclaves here in Dialongan, but they're all underwater. They are aquatic creatures. And they have like full aquatic sort of kingdoms and settlements. And I guess one small clan, you know, they say they worshipped this creature. Uh-huh. And perhaps, you know, already they will tell you there was some ire being built between the Celestials and the Storm Giants. Some demands were made of them that the Storm Giants were not happy about. And they have no respect for Atosh. They have no respect for law. And when they saw their deity driving forth into battle and in Calipang, they just saw it as a symbol that they should strike as well.
Another thing that Salome would like to try to figure out, Salome never knew Paul, but I'm going to guess that she got like a lowdown from Jules when she knew that Paul was missing, and part of their mission here was to look for Paul. So as Jules describes Paul to Salome, how old would Salome know Paul to be?
I believe Paul is 8 years old. Was I round stuff is six. Paul's eight. I'm almost positive he's eight.
I think
you know more than I do.
I'll need to double check that, but I'm fairly certain that Paul is 8 years old. So the next oldest would be Mulligan.
It sounds 10. About right.
I'm asking because Salome wants to ask the Celestials if they know more about this Bakunawa. You said that it was believed to be dead. And I'm going to guess that the timeline lines up, that like maybe the last time this Bakunawa was seen was 8 or so years ago. And then it recently popped up around the timeline that Paul went missing.
Not necessarily. What could they tell you? Roll me a D20. Breaking that D20
over
there.
Got a brand new.
We'll see how much they can tell you. Just give me a roll. And based on the roll, I'll tell you how much they know.
19 on the die.
Okay.
Nice.
Hell yeah.
No, normally they're not super locked into local sort of myths and legends. But I think it's the very one you saved.
I would guess that this information is somehow readily available in this land.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the one that you saved, kind of met you in combat, was talking to you afterwards, and has been, interviewing what he calls Binukots, sort of historians of, like, local lore, because he wanted to understand the world. His name is Aloric, by the way. As Aloric is telling you about things, he just lets you know. Pong Il has not been seen for years, and so it was assumed he had died. They knew, apparently, he lived on an island far off, some desecrated, desolate place to the south and east of this island here, which is, again, Malabulak.
But it came from the north?
Malabulak. He came from the north. Yes, and you know he's been kind of coming from various directions. It's hard to lock down exactly where he is because he's been sort of appearing out of nowhere. He travels both through the sea and the sky, so it's easy to lose sight of him when he dips down. And of course, there is foresight.
Right, the missing foresight.
The Pari just don't have it. But you think this doesn't line up? Like his disappearance does not line up with Paul, and his reappearance does not line up with Paul. Something must have happened 5 days ago. That's when he first appeared and started attacking. But the whole time, they say that same mantra, "Save him," was screamed over and over. Only now does anyone understand what it means. I'm sure you did not share exactly what. The whole Save Jules thing definitely threw the town through a loop. There's a lot of hot talking about that. What does that mean? You know, could it be talking about rubies like Jules the other way? Who knows? I do want to talk about foresight real quick, though. That's another thing that I think you're catching a lot of buzz on as you're speaking with your celestial comrades. Like we said, where you're used to kind of seeing this almost double image of things that might happen all the time. You know, if someone takes a step there, you see an image of them tripping, but they take a step somewhere else and they don't trip. And it's like constantly sort of overloading you with the wild variability of the future. From now, minutes, to hours, to days, and it all just surges through you. And it's so hard to pick through, but sometimes you see a prophecy so strong, so bold, so dangerous that it shines through and you know there is terrible danger. And right now, there's nothing. You feel this sense of like unease and tension through all of the Celestials because there is nothing. But it's deeper than that too. It's ice in your heart. That feeling of shock you felt when you saw Jules in that cage and that memory, not a vision, it stayed with you because there's something wrong here. in the very air. And you have experienced this before, actually. Only once. During the Battle of Angkor and Sengar, when you first arrived into the conquered worlds. Huh. During that fight, you could not see. And it was explained to you then that your view of the future was essentially choked beneath the pressure of a great dominant will. A figure of immense power, his true form forever trapped in the plane of demons, with his sight focused fully on Angkor and Sengar, on the battle there, and on one singular path to the future. Huh. Zomate Shab. Is he watching? Is his will pressing up here? Why? Is this his work? Is this the stirrings of another planar rift, the demonic abyss? Or could it be the work of his faithful conspirators in this mortal land? Calypsonia, Cerise, the Fractured Horn? Something is building here. There is a future being pushed towards, and you can't see it, but you can feel the echoes of fear.
That's a really scary feeling for somebody like Salome, who's used to that vision, used to that level of, I don't know if control is the right word, but not having it feels like not having control.
You speak to the others. Like I said, you know, 5 days ago, these attacks started. Many years ago, 12 years ago, was the last time the great serpent, Pangil Nangbuon, was seen. And so it was assumed he had died somewhere in the desolate island. All you know about it, even with the 19, I think all he can tell you is that it is a place known as Limbakluha, and that the residents of this world do not go there. The Celestials do not fly there.
How come?
Because, Elder Sister, we can't. We are grounded in that place. It is a place of evil. A swampland filled with sorrow and phantoms, contained beneath the boughs of a burnt and massive tree. It is a sight of shame for the people of this world. I don't know a lot. That woman, the one you saved earlier, I heard her speaking of you. She is known as a Binukot, Astorian. I have been meeting with ones like her. I was to meet with her soon to discuss Limbakluha. Perhaps she may help you to learn more.
I will speak with her. Thank you.
Will you investigate the creature? It is dangerous for our kind there. It feels wrong. I have merely traveled to the edge of the great serpentine bridge, Hope's Dagger, and as I felt the touch of that tree, of that land, of that swamp, it felt like being cut off from our home in True, as if death there would be death, true death, never to return to the arms of Kameo and pride, never to tell the story of Atash and his great will. Death. Salome, we do not go there.
Any death for the people of this world is true death. And I will face it to save them, if I must.
Perhaps we cut to you seeking out that woman and her son, still walking together, and you see their eyes are cast towards the sky, watching, hoping.
And they like round a corner and Salome is just standing at the end of the street.
Knife out again. Stay away from him. Oh. Lady Sightweaver. Excuse me. I am Nimuel, and this is Lung Tian, my son. We are, looks around. We wanted to speak with the person that saved my life.
I am very grateful to meet you both. I am unsure where your savior has gone.
There is a problem there, huh?
Yeah, now I'm like, hold on.
How do you find him?
How do I find him?
It's a good question.
You can't find me.
He's in the night. He's gone. End of the
show. You can't find me until I want to be found.
They're just going to, like, continue the arc. You're just going to leave the city. one be wanting this for like the entire next many episodes.
So did any of the other Celestials really clock that Jules was here?
No. There was too much going on. Jules actually moved out of the way of everything pretty quickly and into the building. There just wasn't really a point where they would have seen Jules.
So from a high vantage point, is it possible that Jules, or not Jules, that Salome could have at least seen the direction that they were moving in?
Yeah, you were right there when they started moving away.
Okay.
The question is, I don't know what direction you would have gone. You don't know the city at all.
Nope.
Well, I'm thinking, like, can we just, like, say that,
you know,
they went to some abandoned building in some quarter of the town that Salome saw them moving towards?
Steven, you know this would be a lot easier if we had a fucking map.
A map would make this so much easier.
What? Yeah.
You get town maps. I never do town maps. You deal with it. I mean, actually, what you see in this town, too, is, like, I think I mentioned before, there's a lot of sort of white stone buildings with red roofs. And, you know, these are all sort of new constructs. But as you're looking at this town, you can see where the further towards the north you go and the further towards the sort of eastern side, almost like a crescent moon shape around the sort of outside of this town, it builds into, like, older structures. Many are kind of... Like I said, a lot of the areas here are just like one-story buildings. Out there, you see more two-story structures, larger, almost like small noble manors or palaces. And you see a number of them are dilapidated and kind of run down. Not like ugly, but just obviously unattended.
Okay.
Yeah, all I can tell you, all that I know, is that the second they started running, they slipped into back alleyways and dark spaces. I don't think he knows where they're going. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously he doesn't.
The question is, do you have a way to signal? Should we slide to Jules? I mean, Jules has a way to signal where he is to just Salome.
Can we?
Yeah. Let's over to Jules. As you're over there, you say words.
Like, is there a way?
Yeah. I mean, if you know Salome could fly, you could do a number of things. You could like mark the top of a roof or something if you want to meet inside, like if it was something only she would understand.
Mm-hmm.
I like that, yeah. So we see Salome, you land down, you have this conversation, and you say like, I don't know where he is. And we kind of just fade over to Jules.
I like the idea that it pans across the city over the tops, and then it stops over on a small rooftop on an unassuming bar.
Oh.
And in one of the corners of the roof, Jules is going to take out his lute and set it to the ground, and it's going to shimmer. And then when he removes it, under it is a small, bright J-U.
Oh, that's cool. Hell yeah.
And then they keep moving.
Okay. Kind of leaving a trail.
Mm-hmm.
Hell yeah. As you move Jules, you and Arhalon and Gabriella, the two of them are locked in, kind of like full bodyguards. You're like walking towards an alley. They kind of move to the side, back against the walls, turn their head around the corner, nod. And they're just locking in together. Full soldier squad. And you're sort of following in their footsteps. And you begin to hear from somewhere in your vestment, say, of ascending stone, or what we might call a ascending
Sturge stone.
No, shut up.
I think you called it the Sturge stone in one of our texts last week.
That was a mistake. And I was like, never oh happened. God.
It's actually called a Sturge.
Sturge stone.
The Sturging Sturge.
Oh my God!
So you said, I think it's Sturge. Is it Stone Ascending or Sending Stone?
I think it's Sending Stone.
If it's the other way around, it'd be so funny.
I don't know. We've been calling it the Sending Stone.
The Sturge of Sturging goes off. What do you want to do about it?
He's gonna pull it out and listen.
You pull it out.
We're moving in the shadows still, and he's got it up to his ear as they're kind of going. His eyes are darting this way and that, but he's also has this going in his ear.
And I think you were waiting for this particular message, because you and old Sturgy had a deal you made recently following that extra reward for your DC 30 persuasion check you made on him.
Yeah, yeah.
As you hear a voice rings out. All clear, Julesy. The coyote remains under my protection. Your friends here will never see me, yet they will never be out of my sight. And that's what you hear. You can respond if you want.
I don't think he needs to.
Hell yeah.
He just wanted that acknowledgement and that confirmation.
Yeah. You know,
periodically,
you may have pulled all your fighting forces out for these vital quests. But with Sturge Man on the line, I mean, he has, I will say, he's done some research, he's done some investigating, opened his mind up towards your side, towards your line of thinking. I mean, when you start digging into what Atosh's been up to, what Rune's been up to, it gets ugly pretty damn fast. But for now, he's happy to wait, to continue his investigation and putting the puzzle pieces together while also watching over the Chariot of Lights and making sure nothing comes to harm them. I think you feel very secure as you slide the stone away. Perhaps movement above catches your eyes, Jules. You glance up and you see Gabriel and Arhalon stop and slide and look up to see Salome following your trail. Salome, are you carrying a small woman?
No. Okay. So here's how I picture it. Salome says to this woman, you know, something to the effect of, I know which direction they went. I don't know exactly where they are.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think that Salome and this woman are walking in that part of town, you know, discussing things.
Oh, okay.
And because maybe of Salome's observant feet or something like that, she can see on one of these rooftops a soft glow coming from the corner of the roof. She flies up to investigate, sees the first mark of the trail. And then the two of them, you know, between Salome dropping down and walking and flying up to see, they make their way together.
Hell yeah. And you're moving out, I will say, a lot of the public's been pulled in the other direction where Handsome Jai and Yara are doing the thing. Every time he gets a lady, it explodes. Yeah. And as you are moving along, you see Jules and the gang. You jump up at one point, look down. As you're flying, you see the whole group in an alley just by the main thoroughfare. And you know that this woman, Nimuel, is right there too. What do you want to do? How do you want to set this up? Give me a scene, damn it. Give me a scene.
Salome will fly down to Jules and the rest. And as she lands, she'll tell Jules, the woman you saved is here to speak with you. She's on the street. Shall we meet inside and keep this private?
The fuck, did you carry her here?
We walked together. I saw the light from the, and I flew up and...
We don't need the whole story. Where is she?
Are we safe?
Yes, most of the excitement is on the other side of town where Jai is. You know, he pulls the camera's attention.
I'm just going to say you guys are heading to, like, the eastern side of town, which is more quiet. The western and northern sides of town are, like, way more busy right now, up where the coastline is. And
I have the impression that some around here may be amenable to our cause.
All right, I'll listen.
And Salome will go back to the street.
Oh.
Fetch. What was her name again?
Nimuel.
Nimuel?
Did you keep the teenager, too?
I'm going to leave that up to Nimuel.
Oh, yeah, Luntian's there.
That's her son?
That's her son, yeah.
Okay.
Long hair, kind of covering his eyes, and he looks almost very awkward and nervous.
Insight check. Is this kid cool?
Yeah, roll a check. Roll a check.
Jules is looking from the alley. Only an 8.
He looks sketchy. He looks kind of sketchy.
16.
Jules saved his mom, and he stabbed Jules. He stabbed him. He feels really bad.
Okay.
He's like not sure how to face and talk to Jules because he just kind of stabbed him and then never said anything else to him.
Mm-hmm.
And
thanks for saving my mom. Sorry about stabbing you.
Basically, yeah. He doesn't really know how to approach that topic. And you see he's kind of just playing with his hands and like picking that, like hey. Scabs are.
It's all good.
Kind of raises a fist up. Thanks. And I'm sorry for what I,
No apology necessary, buddy.
Like a little smile under his long, dark bangs, and he kind of takes a shuffling step back to let his mother, who kind of fixes the glass up higher her nose, like, I, Jules LaRoche, I don't know how you did it. I died. I was dead. I could feel that I was dead. I felt myself go. I was staring into the fugue plain, the mists of, all I could think was, I was leaving my boy behind.
But now you're not. and it's over.
Not for us. No, no, no. Here in Dayalongan, we have this tradition. It's called Utang Ning Lu. It is a life debt. When you save a life, you gain family. And anything we can do for you, anything at all, please, we will do it. My entire clan, from this day forth to the end of our days, will serve at your request. I can't help in many ways. I have no political power, but I am a Binakut. I have some ability to recall information. I know much of the laws, traditions, culture, history, poetry, songs. You're a songwriter. I can help you with that. I can tell you so much. And I heard you called to Pang Il. You said, what did he say? He kind of turns and the boy kind of, I'm here. He said, I'm here, Mom. I'm here. Do you seek the last Bakunawa, Jules LaRoche?
Do you know where I can find them?
I do.
I want you to roll something for me, actually, holy real quick, shit. Salome. I want you to roll for me. Oh, give me a, this be a perception check. I think we'll work for this. I think it's more just like perceiving a memory and thinking of something.
What's your passive?
Oh, my passive is crazy, I think.
Okay.
That was a 15 rolled.
I'll say 15 would be good enough for this anyway.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not familiar enough with my... Oh, yeah, my passive perception is 19.
Jesus.
When you talk to Aloric the Diva, he talked about Limbakluha, this cursed land. Very specifically, he mentioned a massive tree. And maybe now you're thinking this through. You say those words, I do, as something connects in your mind. The vision of Paul. That great cavern where he was trapped, where Jules, this phantom of Jules, was trapped. There were massive roots hanging from the ceiling as if from a giant tree.
Wow. I mean, the only reason that I, Stephen, thought that Salome would figure out that that was the place to go was just because, you know, because of the evil, because of the Zalmate Shab connection. She'd felt this before at the Rift. And so she knows that Zalmate Shab is involved in this somehow with the whole Paul Cherry Delight connection being kidnapped by them. So it was like just, you know, like obviously that's the next place we have to go. But she... Oh, can she share the memory with Jules?
Whoa.
Oh
man, you've done something like that before. You know what? Yes.
Great.
Yes. It was only through your connection to Jules that you were able to do it before. I think it makes sense that you can do it again. This was something that was meant for Jules. You feel that. It was meant for him. But you had bardic inspiration at the time. You drew it to yourself.
She holds out her hand, sort of looking at Jules knowingly, saying with her eyes, you know what to expect. Mm-hmm. We've done this once before, Jules LaRoche, but I have something important to show you.
Am I intruding? This feels really personal. Can I be here?
You're doing great.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And Jules will reach out.
Memory in your mind like a flash. Paul's hand reaching out behind bars, reaching towards you, Jules, you, but broken and beaten, barely alive, tortured. And you see the sickness of your mother's design. That's how she would break him. She would use you, use your image, torture you before him until he snapped.
There is an island. The Pari, the Celestials, cannot fly there.
Limbakluha, right? Oh, sorry. This is not my part still. I'm gonna... Go on.
There was a local militia. What were they called?
The Bonesinger Militia?
The Bonesinger.
They were mentioned earlier, yes.
How can we get to this island? Could we utilize the Bonesinger Militia? Do you have any connection to that group?
I don't know, and wouldn't really directly get any help from them. There's honestly not a lot of them, and they're probably going to be busy here, but I can help you get there. You can't take the sea. I don't know if you know much about Dayalongan, but the sea here is bad. rough waves, whirlpools everywhere. You can barely take a ship from port to port, only close to the islands where it's somewhat calm, but between islands, no. But we have the sky bridges made by the ancient Bakunawa, the great ones. Oh, so much bigger than Pong Il, even. Their bones are built into these bridges that span
so cool
miles and miles, days of travel. They're, if you haven't seen them, you're going to be blown away. But there's one, Hope's Dagger. It leads from, I'm never going to remember this name, ever. Malabulek on the southeastern coast toward Lumbaklaha. It's almost never traveled now, but of course, the Bone Singers will maintain the bridges, no matter what.
The other celestial, was it Leoric or something like that?
Aloric.
Aloric. How far did he say he got on?
He basically that had just reached the edge of the bridge, stepping onto the landmass, and he felt his wings give out.
Okay. Like, so he got like, to the far end.
You can get to the island, and then at that point.
Gotcha.
It's a dangerous place, though. In Snake Song, local dialect, Lumbaklaha means Vale of Tears. It was once the holiest place in all of Dayalangan, home to Bathalang Puno, a temple city nestled within the roots of a colossal tree, a banyan tree, also known as Bathalang Puno. It was said to be where islanders' souls went after death, all of us eventually rejoining the tree, becoming a leaf in its branches. But centuries ago, during a war between islanders, invaders to Lumbaklaha burned the great tree and razed Bathalang Puno, killing untold people and spirits. And in the aftermath, Lumbaklaha became a cursed place where spirits seethed in the land, spreading corruption across the islands. This was hundreds of years ago, but still, it is dangerous. Feral spirits walk the marshes. No one goes there now. But Pong Il, he was said to have lived there, perhaps trying to restore this land. The last anyone had seen him, he had traveled that way. But it's been 12 years, and we have not heard from Pong Il. I assumed he had been killed. Perhaps the poison of the land had taken him. It's darkness. And she kind of looks to the sky. You see, like, great pain on her face. She says, maybe it did. For him to come here and attack us like this. He was said to be sweet and wise. He killed me. His lightning. But if you want to go there, then yes. You'll need to travel to the southeast until you see the bridge. You truly can't miss it. It takes nearly a day travel to reach it and about 2 days travel to cross it. It's big.
Our path is clear, Jules Roche. We will save the last Bakunawa.
I hope you can. It is a sad thing to even have one last one. But for us to feel the wisdom of Pong Il again, have him break the storms above our skies and help our people, it would be a miracle.
You and your people deserve a miracle.
I mean, I've already experienced one. You see, she full blushes. And you kind of hear a from behind of Gabriella.
Jeez.
So she's the jealous type, is she? All right, run, Jules, run.
Spread the word. Gather as many people as you can. Justice undying. And then he...
There's this, like, look of confusion as she, like, she hears you say that and her eyes go wide and she looks to Salome and I think she sees you. What's your expression? I mean, are you stoic? I mean, you obviously aren't reacting, but, like, do you expect a celestial hearing that? It's like, oh, my God, oh, no. And she kind of calms.
Justice undying? Justice undying.
Sorry for putting you in a weird spot.
No. Salome kind of almost always wears a very stoic expression. So I think her non-reaction speaks just as loud as a confirmation.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. And so I ask, do you depart from the city? Anything else you want to do before?
No.
I mean, it's not like we're going shopping or anything.
Yeah. Yeah, we are on the path.
Hell yeah. I think knowing the way around the city, Nemuel and Luntian kind of offer to guide you and, you know, bring you to maybe a very unknown sort of exit point or like a crack in the wall you can slide through so you're not seen by guard, Jules. Mm-hmm. I think they immediately catch the vibe. You don't want to be seen. You know, obviously, everyone knows your license was stripped. They clearly knew who you were. So there's a march, you know, another travel down the alleys. I think as you're moving, Gabriella is staying real close and kind of a little between you and Nemuel.
Oh. I guess it wasn't clear what I was doing. When I went, he was doing kind of like the dark hero thing where he's like, okay.
And just we're good. Flicks his cape and leaves.
Oh, you're leaving. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Oh, he left.
Oh, so Jules is gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
Like, he's giving people the time of day, but he is going. When he gets what he needs, he's going.
Hell yeah. So maybe they point out to you, like, there's one other way you can get out of here. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to just, unless you have a plan to walk past the guard at the gate.
Mm-mm.
Okay. So they pointed it away.
Nemuel also catches up and says, actually, wait.
Yeah, do what you got to do to make that happen.
That way.
Jules is gone.
Take 3 minutes. Just a second. Can I just give you quick instruction to...
Yes, and before we leave, Nemuel.
Jules, Gabriella, gone. Arhalon's kind of hanging out. Other flyer.
Shall we, when we return, we may need to leave this world in secret. As you know, Jules cannot travel in the open.
Of course.
If there is something that you can set up for us in these days to come, we would be very grateful.
Life debt. Yeah, of course. You'll find it on the path as you leave. You'll be passing through a great sort of meadowlands, and about 3/4 mile outside the city on the southeastern trail, I think you'll see a large slanted rock, hard to miss as long as you're viewing it in daylight. I will find a way. I'll leave a message. I'll be there in person. Something. Just find that place and wait for me or seek out my message, and I'll find a way. I promise I'll get you back safe and unseen.
So we know the days it takes to travel.
Yeah.
So if we add those up and then a little bit of time in between, maybe Salome can tell her, you know, us there in 6 days' time. Yeah. Or leave us a message or something.
Hell yeah.
Cool.
Takes it in. And good luck. Protect him, Salome.
He's a very special man. I don't think he needs my protection, but I will give it all the same.
Hell yeah. And you. Take to the skies, perhaps, or maybe stay sweeping low towards the building tops. Arhalon falling in behind you, beating wings as you catch up to dashing quick footsteps. You work your way through the old structures, pillars carved into draconic faces, and find yourself at a point in the gate where there is a sort of a notable kind of opening, a crack or a service entrance, and you leave the city behind. You step out into this vast meadow. At this point, it's getting dark. Moon is rising. You see moonlight reflecting off of a number of white flowers, like tiny white flowers, just way off into the distance, where they touch the ocean somewhere you cannot see in the darkness. You're moving, probably not directly on the path, but as you kind of, perhaps like we're noted with instructions where to go, kind of parallel to the path, just walking through meadow under that moonlight, letting the city gates fall behind you. It's Salome. Salome. Doo-doo. It hits you in a heartbeat, like a grip tightening around your chest. The moon feels so much brighter suddenly, vividly silver. Everything has a almost dreamlike cast. It's not an unfamiliar sensation. This is what it's like sometimes, these visions, the strong ones, the ones that resemble a future, dangerous and true and inevitable. But nothing's changed. You look around and you see the meadow stretching on and on, you all under the silver light of this moon that's just too bright, almost malignant, as it just pours down on you with some kind of gravity that
wants to push you deeper down into the soil. You're shaking because you know something's wrong and you don't see what it is. Jules, all you see is Salome kind of suddenly stopping and looking very nervous, very awkward. Do you do anything?
Yeah, he'll stop and he'll walk up to her and he'll grab her shoulders. You okay?
Hands grab your shoulder, Salome. You hear that voice in your mind. The hands that touch you as you look to see them are black and necrotic. Both hands. You turn to regard Jules LaRoche and realize something has changed. Jeremy, once you described for me the look of corruption covering Jules' hand, now I would like you to describe for me what it will look like when you have fallen, when you have become fully corrupted and taken. What does Jules, the demon, avatar of the Horned Lord, look like?
Jesus Christ. you're supposed to warn me about this so I can put something together. Goddamn.
You and your sick mind.
Beauty of improv.
No, I think this the only thing you can only think about this kind of thing when you're sick, right?
I think if we're looking, yeah.
So give me some flu, fever dream bullshit here.
His skin, everything turns black, and his skin starts melting off.
Oh, and God.
It goes all the way down to his bones, and as it gets to the last little bit, everything kind of catches fire. And...
Ooh, he got himself.
Yeah.
Don't forget about the respiratory illness.
And it just kind of scorches the rest of the skin that's on his bones.
Holy shit.
And what's
shit.
Left is just black, smoldering, you know, bones with embers and ashes all over them. And his head is... You ever watch Tales from the Crypt?
No.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
The Crypt Keeper?
The Crypt Keeper.
Ooh.
His head is very much like a dead thing with stringy hair sticking out everywhere.
If I may add one small detail, we see the bones of your skull begin to rise up at two points as two curved horns indicative of a very dangerous god rise up gleaming in the silver light. You were a part of the battle for Anchor and Sengar, Salome. You watched as Atosh locked blades with a humanoid being of immense power, an avatar of Zulmate Shab. You don't know who this previous avatar was before the possession and transformation. I don't believe anybody who lives in these worlds now does, perhaps Calypsonia. But you did see the figure post-transformation, and they looked so much like this premonition of Jules. You take in this figure, eyes wide with horror at the inevitable future. What is our concern, Jules? Continue saying. Just give me some cool lines to come out on. You know, like, hey, you okay? You okay? Because you know, you're starting saying that. I don't know, like, just imagine them, just cinematic, boom. You know, Salome's staring at you, and you're just kind of talking. Just to give us a cool outline.
Well, I was going to take her hand and put it onto him.
Do it.
All right, yeah. And Jules takes Salome's hand into his hand.
Oh, Salome.
Hopefully being able to see what she's seeing.
And Salome says, very quietly, Jules might only even notice that she's saying anything if he watches her mouth. And she says, Jules, your horns.
And we'll call it there.